working on it. Okay, we're ready.
Okay. All right. Morning, everybody. My name is Pat Ward. I'm the administrative law judge pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings at the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the procedural hearing officer for this hearing. This is the hearing on the application of Montana Dakota Utilities for modification to its generation resource recovery rider tariff and to increase associated electric rates under the GRRR. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission consolidated case number PU-15-704. The one issue to be considered is whether the tariff change is just and reasonable. The other issue to be considered in this proceeding regarding the Heskett 3 and the reciprocating internal combustion engine units at the Lewis and Clark Generation Station are: 1. What is the value of MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? 2. What is MDU's rate of return on its property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? 3. What is the just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? 4. What rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota? 5. Are MDU's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination? 6. Other relevant information or proposals concerning the proceeding. The record will show that it is a little past 9 a.m., February 4th, 2016, at the Commission Hearing Room, 12th floor, State Capitol, 600 East Boulevard Avenue, Bismarck, North Dakota, which is the time, date, and place set by the notice of hearing. Mr. Sanderson, would you please state your appearance for the record and appearances of any co-counsel? Yes.
Thank you, Judge. Commissioners, my name is Paul Sanderson. I'm here today representing Montana Dakota Utilities Company in this application and hearing. With me is MDU's Associate General Counsel Carl Liepitz, and Tammy Aberle, Director of Regulatory Affairs, is with us here as well.
Thank you. Mr. Stu, please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any PSC staff member who will participate in the hearing.
John Shute, on behalf of advocacy staff, along with me today is Victor Shook, utility analyst.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, advisory counsel, excuse me, and with me today is Jerry Lean, public utility analyst.
Before we begin, I was wondering if there's any opening remarks from the commissioners. Chairman Fedorchik.
Just briefly, good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. We set the stage for this early on receiving this application, indicating that we wanted to have a formal hearing to be able to talk through some of the issues, understand better what the resource additions are that you've added, and, you know, talk about whether the rider is the appropriate way to handle this. Since then, I appreciate that the advocacy staff and you all have come to a settlement agreement. And so today I'm looking forward to getting a little bit better understanding of some of the terms of that agreement, and then probably looking forward to a more thorough and deeper discussion down the road if the settlement agreement turns out to be something we want to support on the full issues for MDU. So I think I look forward to a good discussion this morning and more down the road. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman.
I'll pass. I have no opening comments.
Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wonder if Randy will have any closing comments today.
I may.
That's the long inside joke. The kind of to dovetail what Commissioner Fedorchik said, thank you for getting this here today. I think I really appreciate breaking it into the renewable rider and the generation rider, and we'll see how the rate case plays out in September, one way or the other. The only real question that I had is read all this stuff, but let's say we approve this settlement agreement. How does that play into when you figure your interim rates for the rate case when you file it? How do these resources get counted? And so that's one thing that either I didn't pull it out of what was filed, or I just want that clarified, that if we approve this, how do you figure that in the interim rates? Because there's a cost associated with this, and there's facilities. Would that be considered, I guess it's the previous rate case. But anyway, if you guys could walk through that, that would be very helpful. Other than that, I just whatever standard questions might pop up. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Sanderson, I think you indicated you want to mark some exhibits in advance of the hearing.
Yes, Your Judge. At this time, MDU has three exhibits. We would exhibit one is our application in this case with the attached exhibits. Exhibit two is the settlement agreement that we've entered into with advocacy staff. And exhibit three is the PowerPoint presentation for our witnesses we will be calling here, and they'll be walking the commission through. So at this time, we would offer MDU exhibits one, two, and three.
Okay. Mr. Hsu, any objection?
Ms.
Jeffcoat-Sackler?
No, we have no objections.
Okay, those three exhibits will be received. Mr. Sanderson, any opening remarks or opening statement?
Yeah, just briefly for purposes of the commission. We're here today on, as you're aware, on our application to update the generation resource recovery rider. There's two components to this, but the bigger one is to recover the cost of two improvements that we've made to our system. The Heskett 3 gas turbine, I think the commission is very familiar with that through both the ADP and the siting process that has went on here. So we probably won't present a lot of information, but the other main component of that is the Lewis and Clark reciprocating internal combustion engines located near Sidney, Montana. Today we'll be calling three witnesses. Tammy Aberle, the director, MDU's Director of Regulatory Affairs, is going to walk through an overview of the application and also talk about the settlement. We've brought in also, and I didn't mean to downplay their role in today's hearing. We have Darcy Nigam, MDU's Director of System Operations and Planning, and Darcy's going to talk about really and focus on the need for the Lewis and Clark, why MDU decided to move forward with this. And we also have Alan Welty, MDU's Director of Generation, and he's going to talk about the technology that went in that was selected for this project and the costs involved and give a more detailed analysis. So we will have them available for any questions. And with that, we're here today asking the commission to approve the settlement we've reached with advocacy staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanderson. Mr. Hsu.
Yes, sir. We just have one exhibit, and it's already been marked in and distributed, PSC Exhibit 1. And at this time, we'd just like to offer that in evidence. It is just a brief statement by Victor Shook regarding the settlement agreement.
Mr. Sanderson, any objection?
No objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackler?
No objection.
Okay, that PSC 1 will also be received. Any opening comments?
No, Your Honor. I'll waive the opening.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackler, opening comments?
No, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Sanderson, you can call your first witness.
Montana Dakota would call Tammy Aberle.
Morning, Ms. Aberle. I suspect you've testified here before, but whether you have or not, it's incumbent on me to advise you of the penalties for perjury in North Dakota, what I call the perjury admonition. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. A Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, a fine of $10,000, or both could be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Sanderson.
Thank you. Ms. Aberle, could you please state your full name and business address?
My name is Tammy A. Aberle. My business address is 400 North 4th Street, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58501.
And whom are you employed by?
I'm employed by Montana Dakota Utilities Company.
And what is your position with Montana Dakota?
I'm the Director of Regulatory Affairs.
And could you briefly describe your responsibilities as Director of Regulatory Affairs?
I'm responsible for the development and implementation of the company's regulatory objectives and compliance requirements.
And could you briefly provide us with a description of your educational background and work experience?
I graduated from Morehead State University with a degree in accounting, and I have been with Montana Dakota since 1983 in the Regulatory Affairs Department.
And Ms. Aberle, are you familiar with MDU's application in this proceeding, which has been marked and admitted as Exhibit 1?
I am.
And are you aware, did MDU enter into a settlement, enter into settlement discussions with advocacy staff in this case?
Yes, we did.
And was MDU able to reach a settlement agreement with advocacy staff?
Yes, we did.
And I believe that's the settlement agreement has been marked as and admitted as Exhibit 2 in this case?
That is correct.
Ms. Aberle, have you prepared PowerPoint slides regarding your testimony here today?
Yes, I have.
And those PowerPoint slides that you have prepared have been marked as Exhibit 3 in this case?
Yes.
And what subject areas will you be addressing in your testimony here today?
I will provide an overview of the company's application and the settlement agreement reached with advocacy staff.
Ms. Aberle, using your PowerPoint slides, can you please walk us through your testimony here today?
Yes. On October 26, 2015, Montana Dakota filed to update the Heskett 3 costs and proposed to include the costs associated with the reciprocating units, which I will hereafter refer to as the RICE units. So we filed to include those units in our generation resource recovery rider. The Heskett 3 costs had been a part of that rider previously. We also at that time proposed two revisions to the Rate 56 tariff, which is the generation resource recovery rider. We proposed to change the allocation factor used to allocate the costs among the classes to be consistent with our other riders using the average and excess demand allocator. And we also requested a change in the terms of the tariff to reflect the current capital structure. Previously, the tariff states the authorized return, overall rate of return component. We wanted to reflect the current capital structure so that we could pass along the benefit of some lower debt costs to customers. So that was a language change, if you will, that we also proposed as part of the Rate 56 tariff. So the calculation of the revenue requirement that we requested as part of this rider included, as it has in the past, the return, depreciation, taxes, O&M associated with each project. The Heskett 3 turbine, as we noted, is currently being recovered under that rider. That project was placed into service in August of 2014, and we implemented rates in January of 2015 to reflect the cost of that rider pursuant to a previous docket. North Dakota's allocated share of the Heskett 3 investment is approximately $38.4 million. Now, the Lewis and Clark RICE units were placed into service in December of 2015. North Dakota's allocated share of those costs are $31.2 million. Turning now to the settlement agreement that we reached with advocacy staff, we have proposed to implement the rider, the generation rider, on an interim basis, subject to refund, pending the outcome of a rate case that we have committed to file by September of this year. And this, you will recall, is similar and is in nature to the settlement agreement we reached in regard to the renewable resource recovery rider. As part of that settlement, we also agreed to implement those rates based on an ROE of 10.5% versus our authorized return of 10.75%. As part of the settlement, the ROE and the final investment costs that are deemed to be appropriately included in rates will be subject to refund as we move through that rate case that we will file. At that time, we'll propose to include this generation rider in its entirety in base rates. so that we can move forward and basically the generation rider tariff would be in place yet, but at that point in time we would not be recovering any costs under that rider. We would move it into rates. So again, the settlement agreement really provides the opportunity to look at the rice investment as part of our total resource mix and as part of the entire rate case this fall. So what we're asking for today is to be able to recover those costs associated with that unit on an interim basis. The unit is in place, is providing service, and is available to customers. So for those reasons, we believe it's appropriate to look at it as we have with the other investment in renewables and include it on an interim basis. As part of the application, we did provide information in regard to returns on our investments as they were at that time, and we were looking at a 12 months ending August 2015 time period, just based on the time we filed. We are now just wrapping up, and we'll be reporting soon our earnings for 2015 in North Dakota. And the results of that are as we expected, given the amount of investment that we have put into place in this time frame, in the last several months, in fact. And so our return on equity is around 6.8% that we would be reporting for 2015. So we can show here that, and that is very close to what we had actually shown as a 12 months ending August 15 adjusted for those investments. So we're right in that same range. So we can prove that including this interim will not produce a return above the 10.5%. In fact, it's approximately 9.5% is what we're estimating. So I think that we can prove as part of that requirement of the tariff that in implementing these riders will not cause an excess earning. If it would, the settlement agreement also will take that into account. So if between the settlement agreement says if between now and the final outcome of the rate case, Montana Dakota's earnings would exceed 10.5%, customers would be subject to the revenues above that would be subject to refund and a return to customers. So I think, you know, we've got the safeguards in place if for some reason those returns would turn around between again now and the end of the rate case. The proposed revenue requirement then with the 10.5% ROE results in an increase in revenues of approximately $4.4 million. So that increase is primarily the rice units because Heskett 3 is included in rates today. The charges per kilowatt hour by customer class for residential and small general service would be 0.5 cents per kilowatt hour and 0.349 for small general. The large general has been paying for the generation rider on a demand basis or per KW basis, and that would be $1.44 under the terms of the settlement agreement. Again, using a residential, typical residential customer, using 894 kilowatt hours a month, this would equate to about $1.94 per month increase in their bill. And I could address Commissioner Culk's question at this time. I will say we have not had detailed discussions with staff with regard to exactly how would we roll forward with the trackers that we know we want to roll into rates and if that's on an interim basis. We've had some preliminary discussions at the company and at this time believe that it may be best to just allow both to run on an interim basis.
Of course.
But not to, but they're both subject to refund, and then at the end of the period, they would roll into rates. That's what we believe would be probably the cleanest approach.
Thank you, Ms. Haberle. At this time, I have no further questions.
Mr. Hsu?
No questions, Your Honor.
Click a
Galana's not here. Questions from the commissioners?
Oh. I just moved because of the power.
Sorry.
But I don't have any questions at this time.
Questions from the commissioners? Who's
Commissioner Kalk is a portfolio holder. So.
Commissioner Kalk.
You want a trade, Madam Chair?
Oh, go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Tammy. I'll start out with where you finished at. So you'd figure the interim rates, as you always would, and just keep all these riders in place?
Because they are in place on an interim basis.
Right. So wouldn't that set up an interim rate that's probably going to be higher than a final rate by quite a bit?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
But, again, we're open to discussing that as we move forward with, before we file the rate case so that we can have discussions with staff. And
if you guys would be willing to figure out just some parameters, and whatever you come to, I'm sure it'll be fine, but just so we kind of have a feeling for what that might be if that's the case. So I'll let you guys sort that out. But it's just having this much, you said 194 a month, different filings were 203 and 204 a month, it'd be this. And if the interim rate all of a sudden, this could be quite a shock to people right up front in a short period of time.
Well, and Commissioner, we haven't worked through what this rate case will look like at this point in
Understood.
Time. But given the amount of, we've had our significant investments, if these riders are all approved, I don't expect to see a big increase coming out of that rate case. Right. So it should be a smoother.
That's kind of what I'm trying to get a feel for.
They're paying now for these on an interim basis. So the increase associated with the rate case, again, I don't even have an estimate, but I don't expect it to be significant.
Well, and that's exactly what I was getting at. If I don't know what other stuff you have out there that's going to come back in a rate case that's not in all your riders now. And so if there's a whole slew of the costs which are in these riders, and then you've got a bunch of other investment that you've been doing, and all of a sudden we come in and we've got a $9 a month increase for interim rates. And if that was the case, I might be less likely to approve this interim rate and say, let's just wait till the rate case comes and let you guys absorb these costs.
And as I noted, the return has dropped, as we expected, significantly without recovery of the investments, the significant investment we've made. Again, this comprises the generation rider, the two transmission projects that we have pending in another docket, and the renewable rider that has been implemented. That really reflects the majority of our major investments. Again,
but the renewable rider, that's one that, for me personally, I like that being its own rider, and I don't want that rolling into the rate case.
We would not plan to roll that one in. That one would continue on. But again, the incremental piece of the rate case I expect to be minimal, and I think the rate case will provide us the opportunities then to hone in on rate design and some of those items that sometimes get a little bit put on the back burner when we're dealing with some significant increases.
Okay.
So I think that it really provides the opportunity to dig into what's best for customers in terms of perhaps some different rate offerings. And we talked in the last rate case, time of day rates. This would be an opportunity to move forward with that with, again, I believe, a minimal incremental increase if these riders are all
What about the other way? What if the commission just rejects this? Can you carry those costs till September when the interim rates come into play?
We believe that that would be unfair to our shareholders. The unit is in service. It's providing service available to customers. It is.
What's the customer advantage doing this now instead of September? Not the shareholders, the customers.
The customer advantage
To
do it now is, again, they're stepping into it and they're. I think it's more of a fairness that they're paying for what they're using.
Fair enough. Just a couple other questions, Tammy. And I always forget all this stuff. What's the cost allocation between the different states? You talked about North Dakota's share is $38.4 million for Heskett and $31.2 for the Rice units. When we break out the numbers, what do their different states pay for what this stuff costs you?
North Dakota is approximately 72% of the total, and Montana is a 22%, and I believe South Dakota is about 6. I don't think that adds to 100, but it's around those.
Close enough for bare math, right? The tell me how you're recovering these costs in those other jurisdictions. I'm certainly aware of what's going on in Montana with the rate case. But are these costs, how are you recouping those from South Dakota and Montana now and in the next 8 months?
As you noted, we have a rate case pending in Montana. Montana's rules are much different than North Dakota's. Montana is what we call a historic test period. They don't look forward in time, and it has to be in service in order to recover, even file for rate recovery, or within that time frame. So we filed a rate case in Montana in June of last year. So we were expecting these investments to come into service, which they have. And so we are scheduled for a hearing in Montana next week.
So the cost
to recover the cost of the
of all this stuff,
all the same stuff,
okay,
including in that case is also the Big Stone AQCS project.
So they, that's right, they haven't even looked back to those ones before. Okay,
right. So North Dakota customers have been paying for that.
How do you hold those costs when Montana hasn't paid their share, if you will? North Dakota's customer, you already got North Dakota return. What? How do you cover all those other costs till Montana does it?
AQCS, the Big Stone AQCS project, because North Dakota recognized that, A, it fell into the environmental rider, and we are recovering construction work in progress. So customers have been paying for that project as it's being constructed.
North Dakota customers, but Montana customers haven't paid anything, right?
We have been accruing AFUDC
on
those costs.
All right.
So they'll pay more when it comes into service or when rates are implemented than paying as you go.
Right.
Because those are accumulating as
part of the capital. Does Montana, are they going to keep their, the renewable rider, does that state keep it separate, or is that going to get rolled into some rates for them?
At this point, Montana does not have any riders. They have no statutory authority. We believe they have authority to implement riders, but there isn't statutory oversight there saying there should be riders. And that's in South Dakota. We also filed a rate case in June of 2015, and that rate case is also pending. We have hearings scheduled there in April to really discuss all of this. Now, South Dakota does have rider available, so we will move on a go-forward basis. We would expect our renewable investments would be in a renewable rider in South Dakota, and transmission would be in a transmission.
Okay. So if you filed those cases in those other jurisdictions, you must have some idea what's left to be filed in us in September.
Yeah, it's just really looking at distribution investments and looking.
So could you put something in the record here that kind of, I know you don't have an exact number, but just you just verbalized that by the commission having these interim rates, we don't expect the rate case to be a significant, put some brackets on that, because I think I don't know what your rate case is going to be. If you tell me now that it's not significant, but then you file a $8-9 a month increase because you've now rolled everything into it, then I might say, okay, let's just not do this now. Let's do it. I just want you to put you on the record here of what you think it's going to be, and if it changes a little bit, that's fine.
I would certainly agree to a late-filed exhibit rather than me.
Okay.
Shotgunning some percent.
Well, I think that's
I'm
just speaking. I'm not trying to make my decision now, but I probably am. I mean, it's just if you
put. I would be
okay, fair enough. And then the last thing I had was, how do you bid these resources into MISO? And that might be for one of these other guys over there. I'm just curious, since they're the reciprocating units, how those – Heskett, I understand, but how do you bid those in?
Darcy Nigam.
Okay.
Very well.
All righty. Other than that, thank you, ma'am.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Tammy. So you're required to file by September. Do you have any thoughts on when you – when you actually will file? Should we plan on September, or will it be sooner, do you think?
At this time, I would say sometime during the month of September.
Okay. Can you tell me about this AED factor, the AED factor, or is that Darcy?
The AED factor is a class cost of service study factor. The acronym is average and excess demand. And so the development of that factor looks at how our rate class is contributing to the costs. And so that is a factor that we use to allocate demand-related costs in the last rate case. And so that was the change to move to that direction today. So it really looks at what the class peak contribution is, as well as what it takes into account their energy requirements.
And that was in 2010,
correct,
the last case. And so it was a 12-month coincidental peak before that?
Yes.
And is this something that you do the same in all of your, Montana, South Dakota, they're all in the same? Or is
The AED is what we've used in the on the class basis. So this change does not affect the allocation of total cost to North Dakota. It's a factor used on the class cost. So, you know, what should residential be responsible mm-hmm. for? And we have used that in each of our rate cases that are pending.
Okay. And why is it just now being incorporated here? Did we talk about this for the other riders? Or
well,
isn't it applicable?
It's being the capacity, the Heskett 3 and the Rice units really being
okay.
The capacity is the reason why we
I see.
Brought it up today.
Okay. Can you bring me up, remind me, what are the other riders? Because there's three riders we've talked about this fall, and there have been increases for each one of them. Can you give me a summary of what those increases are? I think we've approved two already.
Yes.
So I get a sense of, you know, how many different increases the customers are going to be seeing and how much that totals to for the average residential customer.
Yes, I can. The renewable rider that was most recently approved, that amount net of the fuel savings customers will see would be approximately $244 a month.
And that goes into effect when? Or did
those
it over?
Rates were implemented.
January?
Yes.
Okay. Was it January? Was I right?
Yes.
Okay.
Drawing a blank on the date.
I think that was our first meeting.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yes. The transmission rider that is still pending
You. Okay.
So this number includes what we have filed for in that rider. Would be about $1.80.
And you want that to be effective when?
As soon as possible.
Okay. All right.
And the generation rider, then, as I stated, is $1.94.
All right. And in a rate case, the only one of these that you anticipate going away would be the $1.94, I'm assuming, the generation rider. You'd still carry the transmission probably, or ask for the transmission and the renewable.
Correct. At this point in time, what I would expect is we'd move those two projects that are in the potentially in the transmission rider into rates. Again, I think investments are a little bit more difficult tracking on a go-forward basis. Renewable, we've agreed to, and certainly we're open to, but that's what our thoughts are today. So the $1.94 would move into their retail rates, and I think a portion of that transmission rider, but we would ask to continue that on a go-forward basis for the transmission service expenses.
So was the company sort of surprised by the escalation of costs, or why are we taking the approach of these riders versus coming in? Why didn't you file a rate case?
And again, we talked, I guess, as we've been updating the commission about the investments, we had been all along talking about including these generation investments as the riders. And so we continued on that path, and that's really what got us to that point.
Do you think it's the best way to do things, having these separate riders that just kind of pancake for customers versus, you know, a more, like, thorough discussion of all of it and then the necessary rates?
You know, I think we've we've reached that point, and that's why we've agreed to the rate case. The fact is we do have the investment. We've been discussing that investment and the need for that investment, and so we believe that it's appropriate on an interim basis until we get to that rate case mm-hmm. and can look at it all together. And I think at that point is a good turning point to move forward again with the renewable rider and move the rest into retail rates. I mean, there's pros and cons. The riders, customers know more about what they're paying for, you know, and in particular, mm-hmm. it provides the opportunity for discussion about what each rider entails. But I don't know that long term it's the way mm-hmm. to go for investments.
Mm-hmm. When we first talked about the generation rider, it seemed to me it was all about Heskett. And that's why we're doing it, because it was just sort of this one solitary investment and it didn't really warrant a whole rate case. So I was kind of surprised when the company came back and wanted to add more into that rider versus just saying, okay, now's the time to go ahead and look at a rate case. So that's why I'm wondering if you guys were surprised by the need for these additional investments or why that wasn't more, you know. We talked about the rider for Heskett alone, and then when it wasn't that, why you didn't just do the rate case then?
I guess we've been talking about the rice investment for some time. At the time, we were really matching again when these units were going into service. So the Rice and the Heskett 3 are similar units. They're peaking units, very similar in nature. They're providing much-needed reliability, addressing reliability concerns, those kinds of things. So the generation rider it wasn't called the Heskett 3 rider. I guess we looked at it as, you know, being able to include in there the rice units in particular. And, you know, as we first filed, we also included Thunder Spirit Wind, and then we later split those two applications apart and went forward with just the renewable rider. So I don't know that it wasn't because it
when
was
you first
a
filed this.
Yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't because it was a surprise to us. It really was. I guess we had been talking about that investment is really picking it up as it comes into service. The rider allows you to closely match when that unit's in service. In fact, it exactly matches because mm-hmm. the rider provides that true-up mechanism.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm starting to hear from customers almost every time MDU comes up that they're tired of getting rate increases from MDU. And I think some of this is why, because the riders are coming on an incremental basis and they're hearing this discussion. And it's, there's a debate whether we should go with one larger increase or a series of smaller, I think. So we'll have to weigh that and the advantages of the broader discussion of a rate case. So, I think that's all for now. Thank you, Tammy.
Mr. Chrisman.
I really just have a few clarifications, I think, Tammy. You'd said that if the ROE turns out to be more than 10.5%, the excess will be refunded. Is that 100% of the excess, or is that some kind of a percentage share?
100%.
Okay. And in Exhibit 1 on page 7, it still says that the generating units are scheduled to be completed in December of 15. Did they get completed and they're operational and working?
Yes, they are.
Both units?
Yes.
Any estimate on what when did they come online?
Late December. Alan has a timeline. They were officially closed. The rice units were officially closed into service on December 31. They were available earlier than that in December, but
okay.
End of December.
Okay, and then lastly, in Exhibit 2 on page 4, it says the settling parties contemplate the elimination of the Generation Resource Recovery Rider after finalization of the rate case. So I just want to be clear what we're talking about here. We're talking about then the rate case zeroes this out, but is it the intention of the company and advocacy that this is a bad way of doing it and there's not going to be Generation Resource Riders in the future? And so you're kind of like eliminating that method of moving forward, or does it just mean zeroing it out for this at the point of that next rate case?
My intent would be to zero it out.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
Sorry, there was a couple more that I forgot to ask you, Tammy. I think it's your exhibit. It's the exhibit. One is the application, right? The original
Correct.
Application. Okay, so then page, exhibit six, page 1 of 6. This is just a clarification. There's, and it's referenced also in the testimony on page 10, that you're estimating a return on equity of 10.65%. Can you, including the proposed cost recovery for Generation Resources, Lewis and Clark Rice units, and Thunder Spirit Wind. So tell me, I thought you expressed something different than that in your original comments.
Commissioner, I did, and we and those were updates to these numbers based on 12 months ending December 2015. At the time that we prepared this application, we provided this demonstration based on 12 months ending August 31, 15.
Okay.
Then we added in those investments because they wouldn't have been in rate base at that point in time, the
mm-hmm.
The Thunder Spirit Wind and Rice, so we added those in and estimated a return of 6.31 as shown and the 10.65. We're just finishing up with our returns for year end. In fact, will be released today, I believe, that the actual earnings release. And so our North Dakota for 12 months ending December 31, 15, that 6.31% with those investments, excuse me if I could refer to, would be 6.88%.
And what's the ROE?
That is the
well, what's ROE. The 10.65%? What's the? I thought you said something different. I thought you said something like 9.5. But
9.5 would be with the if we had the riders in place.
So what's changed to bring that down so much? From 10.65 return to 9.5.
You know, part of it would be weather. Again, I know we say that.
Okay.
It sounds like a broken... At one point, weather's causing our returns to be higher, and the next it's... But, I mean, weather would be a contributing factor. It's been too warm. I mean, there's other there were other adjustments we didn't make to that August 31. I mean, it truly was just adding in those... the Rice units and Thunder Spirit. So... The 12 months ending December would be all expenses and investments made in that calendar year.
Okay. Let me check. Oh, and then there was on page 6 of your application, you say that recognition of the it's starting on page 5, but in recognition of the settlement agreements, placeholder on refiled GRR rates at a later date and the earnings sharing provision for 2014, the tracking adjustment does not include costs through December 2014 as related to Heskett 3. So then previously you talk about the companies foregoing under recovery of costs in December 2014. So can you tell me what that means? Are you absorbing those? How much is that you are not ever planning to recover, or you've absorbed, or however you want to characterize that.
Okay, so
and what is it from? Costs from, is it Heskett, or what are those costs from?
if we go back to just last year, to 2015, when we had asked for recovery of Heskett 3, I'm going to try and find you an exhibit here to refer to. But when we asked, we were in a position, our earnings were coming in above our our authorized return. So at that point, you know, we put the generation rider really on hold until we got closer to year end 15. We originally asked for that in earlier in 15. So because and we did, then we came in. We ultimately did have a produce a return above the 10.75. So we were returned dollars to customers.
Okay.
And so what we said was when we're doing this tracker, again, we're trying to match up what our investment was, the return requirement on a monthly basis. And so because in calendar year 14, we were above 10.75, we didn't bring that into the over-under recovery balance to be included here. It doesn't mean that
you're
we won't...
You're not calling that under recovery then, are you? I mean, because it
no,
wasn't.
We're not including it in this.
Okay, but you're still calling it under recovery.
Well, there is, but we're not. It's not increased by those amounts. We did not. We started,
okay.
And I think probably in MDU Exhibit 1, which is the original filing, if you refer to Exhibit 3, page 1, might be the best example of showing what I'm speaking about.
Okay.
So you can see there, the Heskett 3 came into service in August of 14. We showed here what our monthly expenses were, but the balance on the far right-hand column, we didn't include those expenditures in that amount.
Okay. Well, it might be semantics. It might be accounting speak. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it doesn't seem... clear to me to call something under recovery as if you didn't capture that when you were in fact recovering enough revenues for customers to pay for that, those costs, which is why we didn't trigger the generation recovery rider at that time, right? Because you were getting enough. Customers were paying and you had enough to cover and to earn a reasonable, in fact, a higher than allowed return. So that kind of stuff doesn't seem straightforward to me. It's confusing, and I would rather the company just told it like, you know, more straightforward and like it really was how it happened, not that, because that made me think like, oh, they're that was cool. They're just ignoring those costs and absorbing those when, in fact, you were charging customers and getting enough to cover them. So just a little point of clarification from my perspective. I think that's it for me, Judge.
Commissioner Kalk, did you have another question?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you again, Tammy. I want to just make sure I understand what Commissioner Crispin was asking. And Julie set it up too. The renewable rider is in place now for Thunder Spirit. What's the one that we put into rates way back when? The first wind farm you guys did with Montana and us.
Cedar Hills, that's and Diamond Willow.
Okay. And those are in base rates right now. So going forward, the renewable rider will just be Thunder Spirit and whatever else comes online. But that's right, because I knew there was one that we've already rolled into base rates. Okay, and then the transmission rider, which is in front of us right now, and Jerry and I actually just talked about it yesterday and today. So the two projects that you're talking about, which are those two that will get rolled into base rates?
That would be the Little Muddy transmission investment, and then there was a Kenmare to Lignite transmission line and substations.
What about like that, your portion of the Ellendale line? Where does that drop in at?
Actually, you know, that investment is not a North Dakota jurisdictional investment.
So that's going to be part of the MISO charges?
Yes.
Okay, maybe Dorsey will clarify that a little bit, because what I'm trying to get to is the transmission rider, and these numbers are not just for discussion, okay? You throw out there 180, whatever it ends up being. But the projects get rolled into base rates, but then the charges from MISO, those will continue every year. So the transmission rider won't go away, correct?
Correct.
And that's kind of where the as new North Dakota projects come on, you would envision those going into the transmission rider until base rates till the next rate case, or how are you going to deal with the transmission going forward?
At this point in time, I would expect it to be transmission service expenses, but I guess, you know, the tariff itself and, in fact, the statute provides for investments to be recovered through that. At this point in time, again, I'm not aware of a project in particular that we would propose, and we would certainly be advising of you of that. So at the time we come out of the rate case, I fully expect that to be a true-up, a tracker, if you will, of transmission service expenses.
But that's part of our discussion.
Which would include Big Stone Dale and Dale.
Okay.
As a MISO charge.
Right. And those MISO charges, well, that's a separate case. But, you know, and I'm tracking on what those are and how we're tracking those numbers and true-ups and all that.
MISO SPP. Yep. I think we need to expand that to SPP.
Right. Exactly. Because there'll be a charge that will have to go there. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think the last one was the... you're giving us your word that you're going to file a rate case no later than September, so we don't have to put any provisions that if you don't file it by September, you get penalized, do we?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Nothing.
Okay. Mr. Sanderson, redirect for Ms. Aberle?
More point of clarification, Your Honor. Just Commissioner Kalki requested a late-filed exhibit, and we'll file that as Exhibit 4. I just want to make sure I'm perfectly clear of what you're requesting.
I think if I could, Paul, I think I'll just withdraw that request.
Okay.
Because as we talk through this discussion, I think the points have been flushed out well enough that it's on this record. I don't think I need any more.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Then at this point, we won't be filing in a late file Exhibit 4 at this stage. I have no further questions, Mr. Avery. Thank you.
Mr. Hsu.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Mr. Shook, do you have something? You don't have any questions. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
I should know this, but does Montana have an ADP process, Tammy?
No, they do not.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks.
Okay, Ms. Aberle, you're free to step down, subject to recall. Mr. Sanderson, your next witness?
Yes, we'd call Darcy Nigam.
Your Honor, if I could, and Madam Chair, could I just request a quick break before Darcy comes up here? I'd like to talk to our guy Jerry before.
Sure, I was going to try to go a little further before we took a break, but let's take a break now.
I don't need to be long, just enough to consult with Jerry.
5 to 10, we'll break till 10:05.
Thanks, guys.
And then we'll go for at least another hour.
That's good.
That's my new deal.
Really? Drums? Did you play an instrument?
Trombone for like a year or two.
Oh, yeah. Nothing.
I sucked at it.
Really? Are you musical at all? Can you sing?
No, but I can listen.
My voice cannot carry. I've never really appreciated how they, how, like, Nate can't match his voice to a note. Is that tone deaf? I'm not sure. But he really, and he loves to sing. And I just think, he can't tell. He doesn't follow the notes. Oh, when we're just alone, I'll say, try to, you know, sing this exact. So I'll sing one, and he'll, you know, and then I'll sing a little bit. I said, can you hear that? No, Mom. I'm doing it. Okay. It's interesting to me. And Sam is kind of that way, too. So I'm sure he'll get mocked at some point. Some girl will say, bad, you're a bad singer, and he'll never sing again.
Like in church?
Yeah.
Because Beth often stays here, and she goes to a Methodist church. She stays here.
Yeah.
But anyway, for whatever. That. But like when she's there, she's a really good singer.
Is she?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And voice like an angel. And then I'll sing along.
Yeah.
There's no sense that anyone really knows.